Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
That's one national anthem that the New York Philharmonic played on its historic North Korea trip this week. And the Philharmonic is back, along with the 80 Western journalists who were probably the biggest invading army since 1953. In a little while, we will speak with our own troop in that journalism army, WNYC's John Schaefer. With me now in our studio, I am honored to have the conductor of the New York Philharmonic, Lauren Mazel. Good morning, Maestro.
Good morning, good morning.
You perform Tuesday morning, our time. It's a 14-hour time difference and probably longer a trip. And here you are already. How are you?
Well, I'm ecstatic because I get back the day I lost flying west. Today is February 29. And we arrived yesterday a half hour before we left.
Right, because it gets earlier and earlier
as
you go west.
Exactly. So I'm quite thrilled getting a day back in one's life. My heart goes out to all the folks who are celebrating your birthday today because, you know, it's the first one in 4 years.
Which actually is going to be the segment after you. We're going to have a call-in for people born on February 29th and people who proposed to their boyfriends on February 29th, which is another tradition. Now, before you went to Pyongyang, you wrote in the Wall Street Journal that the concert might gently influence the perception of our country there. Do you think you accomplished that?
Gently is not the word, no. Dramatically. We're dealing with a country that has been saying rather nasty things about us for a long time. There's driving into Pyongyang. There's a banner about 50 feet high showing a gigantic forearm crushing a thimble-sized, helmeted, Caucasian-featured man into the ground. The banner is in Korean, of course, but on the helmet are three letters, USA. So I rather think we were terribly popular.
A long way to go.
Yeah, and I think in 36 hours we turned the perception of our country around completely because you must understand that no one sees anything on TV except our dear leader. That's 24 hours around the clock. So for the first time in remembered history, there was something else other than our dear leader, namely the New York Philharmonic playing the North Korean national anthem and the Star Spangled Banner, the first time ever heard there, plus a program which...
And Gershwin and Dvorak and...
And Gershwin and American in Paris and so forth. So... it was an amazing event because it really, North Koreans all over the peninsula, that is the northern part of the peninsula, saw us, heard us, and you could feel that in the hall they were beginning to discover that we don't have horns and or fangs and that we're people like they are and that we were there on a friendly mission. And what they gave back to us was... incredible. I mean, standing ovations, waving, tears, you name it, it was there, because Koreans are very passionate people. And I think we turned around that perception, not gently, but really dramatically. And so...
What did that feel like? I mean, in New York, you know, I've been to Avery Fisher Hall. People leave before the curtain call.
Well, I hope that that's not always true at my concerts, but... it was, well, the tour in China was extremely successful, and we had kept running out of encores, and, well, it's a good band, the New York Philharmonic, nothing to sneeze at.
It's not a bad band.
It's a great band.
But it was about more than that.
But there was this extra musical factor.
You wrote in your journal piece about conducting in Russia and East Berlin during highly charged political situations during the Cold War, like the day that Khrushchev was deposed as leader of the Soviet Union in 1964. Could you tell us that story?
Yeah, well, I was then staying in Moscow at the Leningradskaya Hotel, and it was a bleak day, and I was supposed to be picked up and shuttled off to my rehearsal, as was the case every morning. But not that morning. The interpreter called up and said, there's a problem. And she expected me to be clever enough to understand what it could be by saying that the newspaper Izvestia had not been published that morning, the first time in its history. And I was supposed to know that Izvestia was edited by Khrushchev's son-in-law. Right. So, right, I said, oh, right, yeah, understanding not very much. And then bit by bit, I began to put it together.
It
what
wasn't
could
the
she
class-
have meant by that cryptic remark?
It wasn't that people couldn't see the classical music listings.
Yeah. At any rate, we got into our official car, and there was, a ring of tanks, and there was some lieutenant, Russian lieutenant. And so she said, Amerikansky dirigeur, American conductor. So he had never heard of conductors. He had vaguely heard of Americans. Not very much good, I'm afraid. And he shrugged his shoulders and said that he was not competent to make a decision, so we should go on to the next ring of tanks. And there was a captain who said the same thing. And then the third ring of tanks was run by a major, and he just looked and he said, this is way past my competence. Keep going, and maybe you'll get to where you want to go, which we did. And
and you performed?
It was a rehearsal.
Oh, it was a rehearsal.
There was nobody in the streets at all. And I walked into this hall, and there were 120 musicians sitting on stage in utter silence and utter immobility, and had been for an hour and a half.
The power of music. Who else could have gotten through that ring of tanks? And you thought of your performances in communist countries as a reminder to the people there of individual freedom and that they had not been forgotten by the West, you wrote. How does the concert and all the hoopla around it in North Korea this week compare?
Well, more or less the same thing. You had the feeling that people were extremely conscious of the significance of the event, that they wanted to reach out and tell us we're happy you're here. They were very shy, very reticent, but please don't forget that we would not have been there had the government itself not wanted this to happen for reasons of their own, and it certainly wasn't a political a video game. They realized that the time had come to open some kind of door where they wouldn't lose face. How can you lose face if you invite a symphony orchestra and its conductor? That door was open. They didn't have to invite 150 journalists. They wanted to. They opened up their country. My guess is that looking at what is there or what more accurately is not there, I would imagine it is a sign that they finally realized that without help from the West, they're simply not going to be able to move on. I mean, the country is, on its last legs.
My guest is the conductor and music director of the New York Philharmonic, Maestro Lauren Mazel. We can take phone calls for him on his trip to North Korea or anything else pertaining to the New York Philharmonic, I guess. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we will also be joined by John Schaefer in a couple of minutes, John, who was part of the media horde that did accompany the orchestra to Pyongyang. You know, obviously, that this trip was controversial to some. The British music critic Norman Lebrecht wrote this week, for example, about how Human Rights Watch estimates millions of North Koreans have died of hunger as a result of the regime's reign of terror there. And he says, quote, "Music is the loser in this transaction, a poisoned pawn on a dirty board," unquote. Do you feel that way at all?
Well, I feel sorry for Norman because he's been slinging mud for so long, and this time he he missed entirely. He got on the wrong side of the street. Our mission there is the same mission that all these agencies that go into the country to feed people have. We're needed. We offer something called spiritual nutrition. And the event turned out to prove Norman to be, as has been the case so often in the past, way off base.
Even yesterday's lead editorial in the New York Times, though, called it was called A Little Nuke Music. They should have just said Ina Kleina Nuke Music. But they juxtaposed the cheers and the tears at your concert with the North's brazen refusal right at the same time to turn over information that it had agreed to give up as part of the recent nuclear deal. Now, they certainly did not denounce the concert, but does the timing of that make you feel used by the North Koreans in any way?
Well, people are really so naive. There are negotiations going on as we speak. As I understand it, they've entered the crucial phase. And when they do, both parties make a lot of negative noises, as is always the case. They must. That's part of negotiating successfully. But CNN got into the nuclear reactor plant, as you know. And Ms. Amanpour said, you know, there it is. And
you mean when they were there covering the orchestra?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I mean, the North Korean allowed CNN into their nuclear facility. Well, doesn't that say something? They're trying as best they can to find other avenues of contact, hoping that they can somehow work their way into a face-saving solution which will keep their government more or less in place long enough for there to be a smooth, quiet transition over the next decades. I mean, the Prime Minister of South Korea said to me the day after, 70 million Koreans, this is the Prime Minister, not a journalist, will be grateful to you, Maestro Mazel, for the rest of their lives, for having taken a step which, from our vantage point, is crucial in bringing the two halves of our split country together. We thank you. It may take a long time. And I said, well, I also was seconded and abetted by something called the New York Philharmonic. And I'm just a symbol of this. I've done nothing except conduct a concert. Very modest of you, Maestro, but you must understand the significance of this. So important. And your phrase, Americans of Pyongyang, has rung about the world. And it means that you went there. You took the chance. It was a chance. It could have misfired completely. But what is the alternative? We have to move on. We have to find ways and means of solving the world's problems.
And before John Schaefer also joins us, you have also taken some heat when talking about North Korea's human rights record before the trip for saying people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw bricks. Have we set an example that is the United States reputation all that clean when it comes to prisoners and the way they are treated? I'm quoting you. When we can answer honestly about the example we have set, we can stop being judgmental about the errors of others, unquote. Do you stand by that much moral equivalency between the faults of the United States and those of North Korea?
Well, I'm certainly not equating them, and then that was all a hypothetical case. I said, were we to, actually during in this interview, were we to take actions or be responsible for actions of which we couldn't be proud, we would end up living in a glass house because we have to be judged by other standards than those applied to closed societies. We have 200 years of respect for the individual, of law based on the premise that an individual is innocent until proven guilty. We are a symbol of justice. So when we make a misstep, as was chronicled in the Herald Tribune, I read an article by the chief prosecutor at Guantanamo, who said clearly we have made mistakes, and as you know, he resigned because his voice wasn't heard. I mean, here's somebody who was there and who knows. I certainly didn't say these things because I'm not competent to do so. And even were we guilty of the crimes that the chief prosecutor, the U.S. chief prosecutor in Guantanamo claims.
But because of that, we lose our ability to judge North Korea, our moral standing?
No. We lose the moral high ground in order to where we have to stand, in order to point that finger as we should and take action as we should to right these heinous wrongs in other countries, where we're not talking about 100 people, we're talking about 100,000 or a million.
We'll continue in a minute with the conductor of the New York Philharmonic, Lauren Mazel, WNYC's John Schaefer, who is with him in North Korea, will also join us, and we will take some of your phone calls. Our lines are full at 212-433-WNYC. Listening to, Maestro?
Yeah, that's the Farandole from the Alésienne suite of Georges Bizet, which we played as an encore in both Pyongyang and Seoul.
Any meaning to that piece?
Well, it's just a fun piece to hear, and a kind of piece that no one can remain indifferent to. It has an accumulating energy that at the end of the piece it's a knockout blow for both the musicians and those who are
in the audience. And that was from the actual performance Tuesday, as aired here on WNYC on Tuesday night. And we continue with New York Philharmonic conductor Lauren Mazel, just back from North Korea, and also with us now, John Schaefer, the host of Soundcheck on WNYC, who was one of the, maybe I have my numbers wrong, I thought about 80 Western media people. The maestro said 150 tagging along with the orchestra in North Korea this week. In any case,
it seemed more like 150, but there were a number of Korean, South Korean journalists there as well. So I guess whether you include that among the Western or not might be a source of the
discrepancy. So more media than musicians in any case. What size orchestra did you have?
It was 105 people there.
Right.
The full orchestra.
Full orchestra, 105 people. John, from your perspective in the audience, you reported here movingly Tuesday morning about the audience reaction and the tears and all. Have any more thoughts 3 days later about the scene and why it was so emotional?
I think from the orchestra's point of view, it was just so unexpected. Also, I would imagine that after touring through China for what was about 2.5 weeks that you'd been there before going to Pyongyang, you know, the members of the ensemble were kind of maybe a little tired, a little on, you know, at that kind of, when you're in that state where your body clock has been jostled quite a bit, you know, you might just be a little more open to kind of the emotion of the moment. And I think I rushed backstage after the final of the encores just to get reaction from some of the musicians, and they were still wiping tears from their faces. It was unexpected. There had been this unnatural amount of media attention and this burden of history kind of put upon these 105 people, these musicians. And to have this kind of personal emotional connection, I think it kind of lifted that burden a bit. There was a feeling of relief and of a job done, not just a concert well played, but a connection made to a group of people. That was the impression I got.
Anything more on that, Maestro? Not from the point of view of seeing the audience react so emotionally, which I asked you about before, but seeing members of the orchestra in tears. Had you ever seen that before?
Never. And the same thing happened when we played the now famous Korean folk song, Ariang, in Seoul the next day. I mean, the fact that this folk melody unites both Korea was struck home in a very dramatic way to the members of the Philharmonic, and I saw tears again.
And we're going to play a little bit of that piece right now, and maybe you can talk about it as it runs, as a piece of music. Arirang.
A ravishing tune, and one that has been in the hearts of Koreans for years and years. It's about separation. It's very nostalgic. And the words go, if you leave me, your feet will be caught in the mountain passes.
Did the orchestra have to learn that on short notice?
No, we had rehearsed everything in New York. We never go off and tour unprepared.
Oh, but I thought that the idea of the North Korea trip came after you had already left New York and were on your Asia tour. Is that correct?
No. That is not true. There were months and months of preparation. A trip like that needs a tremendous amount of preparation. The logistics, hotels, planes to be booked.
The original invitation was extended, I believe, in August at a time when the disarmament talks were proceeding apace. And after consultation with the State Department, the decision to accept it was made as far back as October.
That's right. And one of our administrators came back to New York with the score of Arirang, the folk melody, under his arm. And he said, well, we had this proposal. And look at it and tell us what you think. And I recognized that the tune was quite lovely, but did not know of its significance. We have several Koreans in the orchestra, and I said, well, what do you know about this tune? Arirang, they said, this is our most beloved tune. Every Korean cries when he hears it. Well, that did it. I programmed it as an encore.
And you did something interesting during the rehearsal before the actual historic concert in Pyongyang. And by the way, Brian, the rehearsal was fully attended. There was not an empty seat in this huge hall for the rehearsal. You brought six wind players from the North Korean State Symphony Orchestra out on stage to play Arirang with your band.
Well, yes, on Korean, traditional Korean instruments, wind instruments, which are very different than ours. And the sound they make is totally different. But the reason for that is that we had a lot of university students, music students in the hall, and I thought it would be fun for them to hear a cooperative musical effort, that is, the Koreans playing the tune on their traditional instruments, and then joined by the U.S. The New York Philharmonic. But it was really not never planned as a an event for the concert.
Mm-hmm. Noreen in Floral Park. You're on WNYC with Maestro Mazel and John Schaefer. Hello.
Yes, hi. I kind of want to respectfully say, as an artist myself, I think it's easy to be a little naive when it comes to political things. I don't know if it's just because I've always been fascinated by Korea or what, and not to plug CNN or any other media thing, but they had some fascinating documentaries over the last couple of years where they got undercover cameras into North Korea and also interviewed people who had escaped, including prison guards and stuff. And I just think our missteps in Guantanamo Bay can never be equal to what's going on in North Korea. I mean, with, you know, arresting whole families if one person says something political, and bayoneting pregnant women, and forcing children who are in the prison to stone other people to death. And also, the fact that you went to Pyongyang, where you have to have a certificate from the government to live there, makes you think these people have special permission because they're trusted by the government. It's believed that less than 20% of North Korean people have a television, And I'm positive every media person who was in North Korea from the West had government minders, because a few times you see documentaries where media people get in, there's always government minders.
And I want to ask John about that in a minute. But Noreen, just tell me your own opinion. Do you think it would have been better for the human rights of the people of North Korea if the orchestra had not gone?
I don't think it will make a difference to them. I think with the government they have in place there, it's a hopeless situation. I mean, I didn't know how bad it was, because it's such a closed society, until they had those few media people get in right there, and those hidden cameras, more importantly, that were smuggled across the Chinese border.
Noreen, thank you very much. John, what about handlers?
There were indeed handlers, and each of them was assigned to five or perhaps six Western journalists. And the problem there was that we didn't all want to cover the same things. There were buses that took the orchestra and the media to various things that were on the itinerary. And, for example, having a broadcast of the concert to host that evening, I definitely wanted to be at the rehearsal in the morning. The rest of my group were being taken on a bus to go see the sights of Pyongyang, which was in itself kind of a surprise. You know, we had been told that it would be very restricted what we could see and do. And, you know, this was absolutely scandalizing that my minder, Mr. Lee, as he was known, he could not understand why I wasn't going with the rest of the group.
Huh, because even though it was an opportunity, and this is always a tough situation for journalists, I've been in this situation, where you are taken on an official tour of something for propaganda purposes, but you don't want to not go because it's a propaganda tour. You want to go and learn what you can learn independently.
Right. And so I actually did go to the rehearsal, halfway through which somebody I had not seen before, not one of the minders, came in looking for me, just to be able to keep track of me and see where I was and what I was doing and when was I going to rejoin the group that's on the bus tour. So, they really had their hands full with us.
He's watching the rehearsal. What is this person up to? Sharon in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I have three things I want to say. First of all, I think Maestro Maisel and the orchestra should have been given a ticker tape parade by the world. I felt this was a opportunity for a prayer by anyone who was sensitive to music to get, for world peace, not just Korean peace. I also want to thank I want to express that hearing the Korean music, the anthem and the do, which is the best translation I've been able to get, showed me the passion and the majesty and the heart of these people. Listening to that national anthem and the other piece, I thought, what a beautiful country Korea must be, and what beautiful expressive souls need to be freed. And so I just want to thank Maestro Maisel and the entire orchestra for this humanitarian act.
Sharon in Manhattan, a one-woman ticker tape parade. Thank you very much. Did you get out, Maestro, and see the city or the countryside at all?
Certainly not. No time to do that, and I knew what I would find. I mean, I'm a veteran of the Stalin period in Russia. It's very Stalinist, everything. I mean, I don't think a proper bed has been made there in the last 50 years. They're in bad shape, really bad shape. And indeed, the country is suffering terribly. And needs us, and they're reaching out to us at this time through the government, which of course can't shed its habits overnight. I mean, it is an oligarchical state, and it has to function as one. It's going to take a while. I mean, after East Germany was absorbed into West Germany, became one country, they're still trying to shed their East German habits 30 years later. So we're not going to lose all of that. No one ever equated Guantanamo or whatever other places we have been to and not done what we should have done as Americans in respecting law and human rights, with the human rights record of these tyrannical regimes. The only point that has been ever made is that we have a higher standard to adhere to, and it is expected by everybody all over the world that we stick to that standard, that we represent it, that we do what we have to do to be able to hold our heads high among the community of nations.
You had asked, Maestro, that some ordinary Korean citizens be allowed to see the concert. Did that happen?
Well, you were out, weren't you, in the audience?
Yeah, especially for the rehearsal where you had librarians and students and teachers. The evening, the actual event, there were huge swaths of the audience that were diplomats.
Clearly. Speech, yeah. As is also the case at the UN. Mm-hmm. I mean, diplomats tend to gravitate to diplomatic events. But
but after the rehearsal, presumably some word would get out on the street outside of diplomatic circles.
Well, Zarin Mehta, the president of the New York Philharmonic, told us in between the rehearsal and the actual concert that day that he had been told that the Philharmonic could have stayed for another 3 or 4 days and sold out all of those events because there was that much demand for tickets.
Ian in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Lauren Mazel and John Schaefer. Hello.
Hello. Good morning, Maestro. Good morning, Brian. And just wanted to say, first of all, Lauren Mazel, I really loved your De Valkyrie at the Met. I hope you might be conducting some of the ring cycle coming up, but I don't want to wish too much. My question, I echo Sharon's sentiments that I think this was a great thing, the New York Philharmonic going to North Korea, but I wanted to know what involvement the State Department had in putting together the program. It seemed like, what ended up happening on, it was a bit jingoistic. I mean, it was mostly American theme programming, the Symphony from the New World, Gershwin, and of course the playing of the national anthem. I mean, I'm going to see the Vienna Philharmonic tonight. They're not going to be playing their national anthem. They're just going to be playing music. And
you were offended by that, Ian, even in this context?
No, I'm not offended by it, but what ended up happening is, I mean, if you looked at on CNN, I mean, the clip they played was sort of like a flag planting, the New York Philharmonic playing the national anthem in North Korea, and they didn't actually show on most American television the playing of the North Korean national anthem. And I understand it's, cultural exchange, and I applaud that, but I think the program was a little bit, I mean, if Lauren Mazel probably had his druthers, I don't know if he would have played exactly these pieces.
Well, did you have your druthers? Did the State Department play any role in the programming?
Well, since this is a free country and the government does not dictate to artists what they are to perform and not, I chose this program and am very pleased that I did. Because
did you run it by the State Department, anything like that?
No.
But you were trying to make a point with an American in Paris, New World Symphony?
Of course. We are Americans making our first appearance in North Korea. We are not devils with horns. We have music that we have been performing for years and years. We have commissioned works of great importance to the history of music, such as the New World Symphony from Anton Dvořák.
Which was written for and commissioned by the New York Philharmonic.
Exactly, and premiered by the New York Philharmonic. And, of course, American in Paris is the quintessential American music. We were there as Americans, and at the same time a great piece, and gave me the opportunity of coming up with that phrase that now going about the world. Someday, perhaps a composer will write a piece called America's Pyongyang, meaning, of course, that we felt it was important enough an occasion to be commemorated, which the North Koreans understood. There was that moment of agonized silence when I thought I had bombed yet again. And then they all cheered.
It's like
they got it. They got it.
like the silence that came after the Gettysburg Address. Before you go, one other thing, off the topic. You've been conductor of the New York Philharmonic since 2002. You've also lived and conducted in Berlin, Vienna, Munich, Cleveland, Valencia, Spain, and I'm sure I'm leaving places out. Do you find that audiences are different in different cities?
Well, they differ from hall to hall in those cities. In Paris, the audience for classical music is much better in the Champs-Élysées than it is in the Salle Pleyel. In New York, the audience at Carnegie Hall was always known as being more sophisticated than that at Avery Fisher Hall, which I have tried to change over the last 6 years, I think rather successfully. I think we have two great audiences now in New York. From city to city, it really is a question of sophistication, knowledge of music, and you can find people in the most lost in the history of the world places there are folks who are great fans of music, have a fantastic record collection, CD or whatever. So the dissemination of music, thanks to the technical means now put at our disposal, is absolutely staggering. I see this in China, where I think the future of classical music will be probably more successfully defended than any other country. Huh. A huge population. They're crazy about classical music, and they have new players, thousands of them who are very keen and who want to help strengthen our tradition.
And the New York Philharmonic concert the last night in Beijing before Pyongyang was an event where scalpers were asking for tickets, not just selling them, but asking people walking in to sell their tickets to them.
And as we go out with Dvorak's New World Symphony from the performance, remember WNYC's broadcast of the entire concert is available at WNYC.org. And John kept a great blog, which is linked to on the homepage at WNYC.org. WNYC's John Schaefer, welcome back.
Thank you.
Maestro Lauren Mizell, thank you so much for coming and visiting
great
with us.
Great being here. Thanks for asking me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up in a minute. Call us if you were born on Leap Day.